Aid agencies are warning of an imminent humanitarian disaster in North Korea. It's been extensive flooding caused by heavy rains brought on by Typhoon Lion Rock at the end of August.
U.S. officials are calling it a smear, the online posting of hacked medical records for top U.S. Olympic athletes. Superstar gymnast Simone Biles, Venus and Serena Williams, and basketball player Elena Deladon. Officials point the finger of blame for the athlete's hack at Russia. These hackers also broke into the computers of the Democratic National Committee.
5,300 employees were fired after more than 2 million bank and credit card accounts were opened without customer permission. Now Wells Fargo paying $185 million in fines. But new revelations showing that the Wells Fargo executive in charge of consumer banking, Terry Tolstedt, is walking away with a $125 million retirement package, according to Fortune magazine.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Wednesday. It is September 14th, 2016, 5:09. Welcome to another edition of the Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day. And yes, if your coffee tastes a little bitter after hearing the opening montage this morning, you heard right. That big retirement golden parachute for a CEO, for a boss that's charged with all that malfeasance. Wouldn't that be nice just to have a golden parachute, right? We're going to be talking a little bit about retirement coming up here. A new Bankrate survey tells us just how many of us are planning for retirement, how many of us think it actually may happen. We'll discuss that a little later in the broadcast. Chevy's Bolt with a B is out. They had the big unveiling yesterday. We'll go to Detroit to talk to Dale Buss about that and other automotive news. But the Bolt, big news for General Motors, and we'll discuss that. But first, at the WGN Market Desk this morning, you heard some of the numbers there from Vic as we look at the Market Desk numbers this morning. The Dow futures are off again this morning, and the S&P and NASDAQ futures are a little bit lower as well. They have been much of the morning. The Dow has just turned positive now, up about 20 points in Europe overnight. Generally a decent night. All the arrows are pointing upwards. Not the story in Asia, however. The Nikkei off almost 1%, 114 points lower this morning. Hang Seng and the Shanghai also are lower. Asia market struggling this morning as we look at those business numbers. Here in this country, again, we're looking right now at least for a positive opening when the bell rings later this morning. The Dow yesterday gave up about 258 points. Market still jittery about the Federal Reserve. Also, energy stocks weighing heavily on the market. Oil, a big part of that. We did get some decent numbers yesterday in a few areas, but oil was the big deal. Financials fell as well as the sentiment increases that there will not be a rate hike at next week's Federal Reserve meeting. And Ken Kamen of Mercadian Asset Management says,
now all of a sudden we start getting all this Fed speak over the last couple of weeks, and everyone's on edge that, you know, I call it the yay boo game when you were a kid. You know, I got a bottle of beer, yay, but it's empty, boo. I mean, that's what the Fed is doing. You know, each one's coming out. So we're seeing this market in this manic period now, and I guess today we're seeing the manic side go the other way.
And we'll see what happens today. Again, Dow futures are pointing up. We did get some good news yesterday in terms of income. Household incomes rose for the first time in 8 years. The poverty rate fell, but not as much. It didn't go up as much as everyone had hoped. Sheldon Danziger of the Russell Sage Foundation.
We basically have recovered the ground lost during the Great Recession. But the economy, whether we're talking about poverty or household income or inequality, still doesn't look as good for the typical worker as it did in 1999. So it would take many positive years like this going forward for us to make a substantial dent in poverty and inequality and really have widespread prosperity.
One aspect that did not make much progress in the latest report, the gender pay gap. Full-time working women still earn 80% of what men earn in the workplace. Well, are you planning for retirement, putting money away, socking it away in a 401k, thinking about that day when you might get a golden watch at least? Believe it or not, 7 in 10 Americans are planning on working during their retirement. It makes you wonder if that really is the word we should be using, retirement. Bankrate.com is out with a new survey. Jill Kornfield is one of the experts at Bankrate. She joins us this morning here on The Opening Bell. Good morning, Jill.
Hey, Steve.
So this is the question that we've all sort of been throwing around this morning. Is retirement even the word we should be using? Because if people are planning it, 7 in 10 Americans plan on working during this period, it really isn't retirement, is it?
Steve, I'm not sure we have a word for what people are planning these days.
Yeah.
Because if you continue working, obviously you're not retired, but people are hitting a certain age that we used to think of as retirement age, you know, somewhere in their 60s, early to mid-60s, and they're continuing to work. They may not be continuing at the same job, but they're going to continue doing something that brings in some money and gives them a place to go a few days a week.
And so how did we get to this point? Let's talk. We'll get into the nuts and bolts of your survey and your research coming up, but give us a sense of how we got to this point.
It's a lot of factors altogether. I think that we have a bunch of things happening now that we didn't used to have. We've never had before. One of them is longevity. We're all going to live a lot longer. Another is the lack of pensions. We're going to need more money to fund that retirement, that stage of life, and we don't have the pensions, at least, that we used to have. We have Social Security, but obviously there have been cuts to the benefit. In fact, if you ask millennials, they say they're not even going to count on Social Security because they don't think it will exist. So there's longevity, lack of pensions. People are poor savers. There are a number of people who just don't have the assets to say, yes, I'm going to just, you know, hit the golf links at a certain age.
Yeah.
But even those who do, in fact, have plenty of money, have turned it around and have said, no, I don't want to do nothing.
Yeah, that's the other part of it, too, is, you know, the attitude of I just don't want to sit and die, basically. We'll get into more of these numbers. We're having a conversation this morning on our Opening Bell show with Jill Kornfield with Bankrate.com. We'll get into more of the survey and research that they have done. You can follow along, by the way, at Bankrate on Twitter, Bankrate.com.
From ABC News Wall Street Now, another triple-digit loss as investors await signs about the direction of interest rates. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gave up 258 points to close at 18,066. The S&P 500 fell 32 points. The NASDAQ Composite lost 57. Oil prices fell sharply after a leading industry group said global demand is slowing by more than was previously thought. U.S. crude fell 3% to $44.90 a barrel in New York. Argentina's president has urged the CEOs of Coca-Cola, Siemens, and nearly 2,000 other foreign and local companies to invest in his country to help revive its struggling economy. Mauricio Macri took office in December, promising to end years of spiraling consumer prices in Argentina. After 7 years of stagnant incomes, U.S. households got a raise last year. The median American household income rose by 5.2% to an inflation-adjusted $56,516, largest one-year gain since 1967. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program as we continue our conversation with Jill Kornfield of Bankrate.com. She's a retirement analyst there. Bankrate is out with its latest research on retirement. 7 in 10 Americans plan on working through retirement during this period that we're calling retirement. Jill, before the break, we were talking a little bit about this, and then you heard as we hear our incomes are going up. Is that part of the problem? Are we not being, have we not been paid enough that we can save? How much did 2008 also go into some of this?
Steve, I think the attitudes were different back in 2009 when we last did a survey that was similar to this one. And then we found that, to me, the most interesting data point was the number of people who said back then that they would continue working as long as possible, both for the money and because they like working. Then it was 4%. Now that number has soared to 19%. So I think, obviously, people were feeling more squeezed and frightened back then in the wake of the financial crisis. But now I think an attitude shift is taking place. So I think wage stagnation, which we did not look at, could play a part. We've all heard about that. But there are a lot of people who are not driven solely by money.
And it is an issue, though, because I know I've talked to folks who lost a lot of their retirement in 2008. They're still trying to rebuild it. Some actually put off retirement. So it's still somewhat of an issue, but you're saying it's not the big issue.
I don't think it's the biggest one. I think some people have recovered, others have not, depending on what their portfolios were invested in and how they treated them back then. But I think that an attitude change is coming. It's just part of our imagination right now.
And the millennial part of this, too, is sort of scary, too, in a way. They have no hope of retirement. Your survey sort of mirrors others, which they say that they probably won't get Social Security. They'll probably have to work until they die. That's a sad reality, isn't it?
Well, I think, again, you're going to find different parts of the population do different things. I mean, some millennials are very, very bent on financial independence at a very early age. So they say they actually plan to retire quite early. I'm not sure that'll actually play out for whatever reason. But they, 201, they all feel that Social Security will not be there. They have very little faith in that system.
The system, the research that you have done, the people that are not millennials, though, 70% of non-retirees think they're going to get some of their Social Security. How much of are we putting faith in this Social Security program?
It all depends on the generation. The millennials almost universally say there's not going to be anything there for them. The older ones and Gen X feels that, there'll be something there. They're not counting on it, and it's not going to play a big part in their retirement income, but they think that they will get some money. And then the boomers and the next generation older than that feel that Social Security is something they can count on.
Now, the survey says most people like to work. I was surprised that 38%, the biggest chunk of people, say they like to work, that they want to work. Has there been any research on this notion that when people retire, they sort of lose their drive and that sort of makes their health decline quicker? Because you always hear that happening. It seems that somebody seems vibrant at work and then they retire and then all of a sudden they have health issues. Is there a correlation?
There have been studies. I think University of Michigan and RAND Corporation jointly did a study that showed that there can be serious declines in health when someone retires and doesn't have a plan to keep busy and stay active in something. And, of course, the easiest thing to stay active in is something that brings in a bit of money.
Yeah, and that's the key here is the planning part of this. What should our plan be? What should we be thinking about right now besides the money part of it?
The plans should start to take place in your last few years of your career. That's the time when you start to make connections, look around, see what else you could do that's either similar or perhaps pursue a dream job that you've always thought about.
And for those of us who are in our 40s and 50s, isn't this also a good time to be thinking about where we might reside in our retirement? I did a report last year on this notion of retirement in place, aging in place, I think is what it's called. Most people are deciding to live at home during their retirement instead of having to go live with a relative or go to a nursing home. But that's something you have to start thinking about now in your 40s and 50s, right? It's something that, right?
Absolutely. Now is when you start thinking, you might also think, is there a place you'd rather live? Some people retire to Florida or Arizona where it's warm and sunny if they're sick of snow. We're actually coming out with a survey in the next week about where you might like to live in retirement if you're tired of politics.
Yeah, and this could also be the time, too, if you have decided that you want to retire in your home. If now might be the good time to make those adjustments to your home, the physical adjustments that would help you to retire in place.
Oh, sure. You can do adjustments there. You can do home improvements. You can also downsize. You might want to stay in place in the same area, but live in a smaller, more easy-to-manage house or apartment.
Jill, was there any surprising news out of this? Was there one statistic over another that you are left kind of concerned about or that we should know?
Concerned about? I'm not sure anything was particularly concerning or that surprising. I guess it was the number of people who would continue working for both reasons, not just the money, but because they like to work. That was interesting to me. I think that work is a really vital part of people's lives. And over again, as I talked to people who had switched careers or transitioned into something else, I was very struck by how very important that first career still was to them. And even though they had moved into something else that they were enjoying, they were still very passionate about the first part of their working lives.
How do we compare with other countries in this area?
I don't have a quick answer for that. It's a great question. I'm thinking about it.
And the reason I ask is because the first thing I saw this morning in my news feed was a woman who's 93 years old, and she lives, I think, somewhere near in the Asian area. And she rides a bicycle to work. She still works, by the way, and she rides a bicycle up these giant hills every morning to work. And she seems as vibrant and young. She doesn't appear to be 93 years old. That's why I ask. I'm like, in other countries, do they have a different idea of what retirement is?
I'm not sure they do. I think that the physical health and fitness in different countries varies greatly from parts of from our country. I think that, you know, people in Germany, for instance, bicycle everywhere. So that, of course, boosts your health status, which is wonderful. And people do seem to stay younger for a bit longer. I know, you know, other countries have stronger retirement systems than we do. And this is something that we're definitely very concerned about, and policymakers are very, very attentive to.
Jill Kornfield, a retirement analyst at Bankrate.com. Their latest survey, 7 in 10 Americans plan on working during retirement. You can follow them along at Bankrate on Twitter. And Jill is at Jill underscore Kornfield. Jill, thanks for being with us on the opening bell this morning.
Thanks so much, Steve.
All right, have a great day. 5:27 now on the opening bell. Time to head to the newsroom. Vic Faughn standing by. He's got the news coming up, Vic.
Well, Steve, coming up a busy next few days on the campaign trail. We have a preview next.
All right, it's 5:28. This is the opening bell on WGN.
Hey, it's your money. So you want to start a business, but you aren't sure where to begin. Jennifer Reynolds, the woman behind the Sauce Goddess line of barbecue products, says ask someone who's already done what you want to do and is doing it well.
I have no problem paying it forward and helping someone else not make the same mistakes I made.
And here's some of that advice. Once you do start, don't bite off more than you can chew. Reynolds uses co-packers to make most of her products and only manufactures small test batches of new ones. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It is 5:38. We have some breaking news to report to you here on the opening bell. There have been some rumblings about this overnight, but we can now report with certainty that Bayer has bought Monsanto in a $66 billion deal. The word coming from Reuters this morning that Bayer has signed a tentative deal with Monsanto, the St. Louis-based seed company. Bayer, the German-based company, is basically $128 per cash share offer to acquire Monsanto, and it will be about $66 billion when it is all said and done if the deal goes forward. It is one of those international mergers that's been in the news recently. We'll see if it faces any regulatory or other issues going forward. It's been in the works for a while, though, but signing papers this morning, Bayer buying Monsanto. Again, $66 billion. We'll keep following that story as the opening bell continues and the morning continues here on WGN. But yesterday in Motor City, General Motors said the Bolt, its electric car, fully electric car, will have 238-mile range. That's more than the Tesla Model 3. And let's go to the Motor City now, and Dale Buss joins us with the latest on this. Dale, good morning. This is a pretty big deal for GM, isn't it?
Morning, Steve. Yeah, it really is. I mean, GM has been signaling for a while, going back at least a year or so, that this Chevrolet Bolt was going to be a lot more formidable competitor to all these digital tech companies and other electric vehicle makers than some people may have thought. And sure enough, this car is being test-driven now by automotive journalists and others, you know, very eager to get behind the wheel. And what they're coming up with is that it's a really capable automobile. First of all, they're talking about how it's got, you know, great headroom. It's very got very high visibility, kind of like an SUV. It's very roomy. And, you know, GM even thought to lower the center of gravity because it's an EV, to make it handle better than it, you know, the tall profile that it has might suggest. That the best thing, as you mentioned, is that its range is 238 miles between charges. And so it's safely over that kind of magic 200-mile mark that a lot of people have been thinking the auto companies need to achieve to vanquish range anxiety, where people aren't buying electric vehicles because they're just afraid they're going to run out of juice, you know, on the freeway somewhere. Well, and that compares, as you said, to the Tesla Model 3, which is promised at only 215 miles per charge, won't even be out for at least another year. And they're going to be, you know, big competitors, and Bolt, you know, with what appears to be a very capable vehicle, is going to have at least a year head start.
Yeah, and Bolt is the other issue about this. It's not just the range numbers that are important here, but it's the price, too. This vehicle not only beats the Tesla in terms of mileage, but also with cost.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Teslas that have been out so far, the Model S and the sedan and the Model X SUV have been notable not only for being driven electrically, but for their high prices, you know, $70,000, $80,000 and on up. And the whole necessary revolution in EVs, if this is ever going to be a mass market means of transportation, is to get that price down. And Bolt is going to be the first mass market EV that will be available for around $30,000. If you include first mass market EV with this kind of range, it'll be available for around $30,000, including tax credits. And that's about the price point that Model 3, the new Tesla, will come out at as well. So both companies are really bucking to, you know, try to really revolutionize electric vehicles and move them into the mainstream where they just haven't been so far.
Is there a difference also with in terms of productivity here? Because there seems to be a lot of talk and little action from Tesla. I don't mean to put, you know, make that as my opinion. It just seems that they've had delay after delay in terms of their production. Here we have a company, Chevrolet, saying, okay, here's the date it's going to be available. It'll probably, and you can almost take Chevy to the bank in terms of it being in showrooms then. That's not the case over at Tesla, is it?
No, I mean, that's been the biggest problem for Tesla is sort of the unreliability of what's coming next and, you know, being able to take what CEO Elon Musk says is going to happen with that company. You can't take it to the bank. And so for investors, of course, as you well know, it's been quite a wild ride. You know, he'll promise a certain level of production or, you know, the launch of a new feature or even a new model by a certain date, and investors kind of count on that and factor that into their decisions, and so does everybody else, customers and so on, and then it just doesn't happen, doesn't materialize. He's become, unfortunately, infamous for that. A lot of people say about Tesla, well, it's the car company of the future, but it's certainly a bumpy ride getting there, and investors are the ones feeling most of the bumps.
So let's talk a little bit about how this vehicle looks and feels, because I don't know about you, when I talk to people about electric vehicles, they think of the Prius, and a lot of people don't really like the Prius, the way it looks. It's not very sporty. What are people saying about this vehicle?
Well, as I mentioned, I mean, the initial crop of reviews that have been coming out this week as automotive journalists have been driving Bolt is very promising. I mean, these people are paid to be hard on automobiles. They're paid to, you know, be kind of steely-eyed about new technologies, new features, and, you know, just not at all breathless about when they drive a new model. And they're just saying basically that Bolt is basically it's much better than they'd expected. It's a Chevrolet, and so as a mass-market brand, sometimes you don't necessarily expect Chevrolet to come out with, you know, what an Audi would, for example. But and the car is driving very well. It's not displaying any of that, as you mentioned, Prius-like, you know, lightness or, you know, problems with cargo capacity, that kind of thing. It's just being given very high marks. And so that is in addition to being available on a timely basis, and you can probably depend, as you said, on being able to go to a Chevy showroom, you know, yet this year to get one. It's being given very high marks for what the vehicle actually is.
The other thing that sort of caught me by surprise, and I probably should have known this, Dale, is the rebate that is going to be available for people on this. I didn't realize that there was such a high rebate, a $7,500 rebate, is it, if you buy an electric car in the U.S.?
Yeah, that's the federal rebate that's still available for a full electrified vehicle. And there are also, in many states, still state-level credit, not rebates, the tax credit actually is what it is, Steve, $7,500. And there are also state-level tax credits that are available. So, you know, meaning in some states you might be able to sneak into a new Bolt or when it comes out, the Model 3 for under $30,000. And that's certainly a mainstream price. I mean, if you're interested in the car, because it's electrified, because it's capable, that price isn't going to necessarily scare you away. And that is what a lot of people feel will usher in a real rush to electric vehicles that hasn't happened yet.
Mm. Chevy stock, by the way, pre-market this morning is off a little bit, so they didn't get any kind of bump from this yesterday. Let's talk a little bit about Tesla, because Elon Musk was out with saying the new update on the car, the vehicle, the autonomous vehicle changes will prevent fatal accidents. Consumer Reports isn't so convinced.
yeah, and what happened ever since a few months ago, the fatal crash of a guy driving a Tesla in Florida who said, hey, look, Ma, no hands, I'm using autopilot, and unfortunately drove it to his death. Ever since then, Elon Musk has been trying to sort of backtrack about explaining autopilot and its limitations at the same time that he keeps talking about how this, you know, this technology is essentially safer than anyone can possibly drive a car. So over the weekend, for some reason on Sunday afternoon, he decided he had to have a conference call to explain the latest improvement in autopilot technology to try to prevent exactly the kind of situation that occurred for the driver who ended up dying. So it's kind of interesting how Tesla, perceived as the leader in this area, is having to scramble a little bit. While you know, one of the old guard automakers, General Motors, seems to be bidding pretty well. And that's also the pattern Ford. Mark Fields, the CEO, has said, hey, we're going to come out with self-driving vehicles in a few years, and by 2025, you'll be able to buy your own.
And so, not only that, I saw something that you had written about some of these engineers who say that their kids, even as soon as maybe 10 or 15 years, won't even need to get a driver's license because they won't have to drive.
Yeah, that's the guy at Google, which is an interesting point. He said by 2019, his own kid getting a driver's license won't have to bother with it because he'll be driven around in a self-driven Google. But that's what's so interesting is Google and Apple, their programs to make EVs and self-driving cars are actually struggling a little bit. They're laying people off. They're not making a lot of progress. And it's just kind of interesting to see old guard companies in the auto industry like GM and Ford are actually seeming to make the most progress in the new era of self-driving and electrified vehicles, while some of the digital tech companies that were supposed to take over are struggling.
Great stuff this morning, Dale. The Chevy Bolt, you can find it online. We just put a video up, too, of it as well. Good conversation with you this morning. Thanks, as always, for being with us on the Opening Bell.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
You can follow Dale D. Buss on Twitter, a writer for Forbes, the Wall Street Journal, Brand Channel, a bunch of others as well, regular here on the Opening Bell, the Chevy Bolt.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. On the WGN Market Desk this morning, Dow futures are higher by about 15 points. The NASDAQ S&P also just a little bit higher, waiting for a little direction as we head toward the opening bell later on this morning. Things positive now. It was sort of a rough night in Asia, but Europe saw a pretty positive night still going on there. Let's find out how the commodities markets are doing now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Yesterday, more reaction to the September crop report released on Monday by the Department of Agriculture. Soybean futures dropped more than 2% yesterday, extending the steep losses of Monday. Corn futures also fell, and at the end of the day, the new crop December corn was down 9.25 cents a bushel. New crop November soybeans down 18.5 cents a bushel. And it also dragged wheat futures lower yesterday. Livestock, same story, a red screen there. The lean hog contracts posted losses for a third straight session. Plentiful supplies of pork putting pressure on cash prices, and profit-taking hit the cattle market yesterday. So we saw the nearby hog contract down $2.37 a hundredweight, the nearby cattle contract down $1.25, and the nearby feeder cattle contract down $1.65. Could be more of a challenge for soybean growers in Argentina besides weather. Argentina's government is considering postponing a tax cut planned for next year on soybean exports because a recession in Latin America's third largest economy is eating into fiscal revenue. They had cut that support tax on soybeans from 35% to 30% and said that next year they would probably get rid of it. Now, that seems to be a different story, and it'll put more pressure on Argentine soybean exports and their agricultural economy. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a great day as well. Just a couple of final notes as we leave you this morning. Yesterday, we reported on a company called IFM Technologies, with some Northwestern students who presented at the annual Disrupt Conference in San Francisco, sponsored by TechCrunch. It is one of the big events of the year for startups to show their stuff and win a big prize and get a national stage. IFM, unfortunately, was not one of the six finalists. They announced the finalists late last night. IFM was not one of them. Also, some news this morning out of the European Space Agency. You've always heard some say there are billions and billions and billions of stars. Carl Sagan, one of them. Well, the European Space Agency says it has mapped, actually has mapped, 1 billion stars in a galaxy. And that is a big deal because you can think about each of those stars, like our star, with planets around it, indicating there could be billions and billions of planets as well. We'll continue to follow your money throughout the morning here on 720 WGN. And the big Monsanto deal, obviously, Bayer buying Monsanto. We'll have the latest on that. Also, we'll watch stocks as we move toward the opening bell. The Steve Cochran Show is next, and we'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning for another edition of the Opening Bell right here on 720 WGN. I'm Steve Grzanich. Have a great day.